Check out HelloVanessaMedia.com. Check out store.HelloVanessaMedia.com. Subscribe on Rumble, YouTube, follow on podcasting platforms, and LinkedIn. Hi, my name is Vanessa, and today I'm going to be beginning a little bit different of a format for my regular video / podcast, except with the exception of like special broadcasts that I do, where I may interview someone, which is pretty rare. I don't like to do interviews a ton anymore, mainly because it's just so much for me to have to try to coordinate and all that good stuff. But whatever the case, I am going to be doing this thing called a weekly roundup and a day in the life, so to speak. And the weekly roundup is going to be a ton of topics that I come into contact with on a daily basis that I basically kind of want to round up, if you will, so to speak, like a weekly news broadcast for mainly affecting military veterans, essentially, or people soon to be military veterans, like active duty service members or military spouses and related family members in the military community. All right. And day in the life are basically going to be the stuff that I choose to share about what I deal with, both good and bad, as a military veteran these days. So I'm going to go ahead and jump right on in. I'm going to be covering basically topics of interest to me that are newsworthy, and or I think they're newsworthy, or they literally have made the news, or a combination of both, and giving some brief thoughts and insight and commentary that I have about that. So the first one is a breaking news situation going on in one of the VAs, and I'm actually going to go ahead and share the news article on my screen here, but basically it's entitled Dublin VA may have exposed 4,000 veterans to infection with improperly cleaned equipment. This is very much news to me. I found out about it inadvertently when I was talking to a VA employee today about my own situation, which I'm going to cover up on the daily, the day in the life. And they didn't really tell me anything about it. They just basically were like, you could tell they were just bothered by something. And I found out that, you know, this was the thing that they were bothered by, about the fact that, you know, this was happening. And they were very, I think, surprised by it, to say the least. So I'm just adjusting my screen here so I can see this a little bit better. Okay, so here it is. So it says, the VA says it's confident the risk of infectious diseases is very low, but recommends testing for bloodborne illnesses like HIV and hepatitis. So this right here, I think it's been out. Yeah, it came out yesterday, February 9th. Today's February 10th in the afternoon. It says this happened in Dublin, Georgia. And to be clear, this isn't the first time that there's been an incident like this. And to be fair, it's also, it's happened in the civilian non-governmental world, in private clinics. I don't know the frequency because I don't have the data in front of me about like how often this happens at Veterans Health Administration versus, you know, non-governmental, non-VHA facilities. I have literally no idea how often that happens. And because I'm going to be talking so much about the VHA, I'm going to put the banner up here, Veterans Health Administration, just to kind of remind you what I'm talking about if you're watching the video of this. Okay. So it says around 4,000 veterans should be tested as soon as possible for bloodborne illnesses like hepatitis B, hepatitis C, and HIV due to concerns about the cleanliness of reusable medical equipment at the Dublin VA. According to a news release, the Carl Vinson VA stopped all medical procedures and operations between the dates of January 12th through 14th because of concerns about reprocessing reusable medical equipment. Now, I remember, and, you know, I guess this is like the benefit of being on Earth long enough. You just get enough life experience through seeing and observing things. Excuse me. And I remember there was a Veterans Health Administration facility a while back. I don't know if it was a year ago, multiple years ago. It might have been. I can't remember. But it was a dental clinic, and there was something about the instruments not being cleaned properly, which there's a whole science to that that I'm not familiar with. And that the same kind of thing happened where they were having veterans get tested for these same types of potential illnesses, infectious diseases, basically, because of issues surrounding cleanliness of equipment. And I don't know what went wrong, how it went wrong in that situation or in this situation. It's really not communicated, but clearly something went terribly wrong. It says in a letter sent to potentially impacted veterans on February 9th, so it was just yesterday, Director Manuel Davila, I may be saying that wrong, it's in the news article, says the Dublin VA learned during an internal review that there may have been times when all the steps needed for a complete or safe sterilization weren't followed. As to why this happened, like, I don't know why this happened. Now, I did see, because I've watched a couple of video clips about this, very brief ones, because there's not a lot of news coming out about this whatsoever. This is really low on, like, the news media radar right now. But they had said that basically there was they didn't call the person a whistleblower. Basically what they were describing was a whistleblower employee that brought up, hey, I think there's something going wrong here with the equipment and the sterilization standards or whatnot. And that triggered this internal review, which triggered the notification of veterans. And all this is exactly why I'm so big on whistleblowers, really, period, but especially within the federal government or even, you know, government whistleblowers that are within a contract within a government, a contractor, because it literally can and does save people's lives and tons of other resources potentially when you have people that are brave enough, courageous enough, willing to or able to like bring forth these issues in a meaningful way and actually hopefully be heard, which is really almost impossible of Veterans Health Administration, my direct experience. So I don't know, and this is me speculating, if this is something where it was known among multiple employees for a period of time or one or more employees for a period of time, and then no one reported it until it got to just being so out of control that someone was like, I gotta report this. I have no idea. Or if it's just like one person found out and then that person reported it. I'm not sure. I would be curious about the backstory on that. All right, the news article goes on to say that they are now in the process of notifying veterans who had a dentistry, endoscopy, urology, podiatry, optometry, or surgical procedure throughout the month of January. I'm assuming that means 2022, I'm guessing, because that's, you know, didn't say what year. I'm just guessing it's this year. The VA says they are, quote, confident that the risk of infectious diseases is, and it's underlined, very low, end quote, and that testing for veterans is not required but will be available free of charge between February 9th to 25th. It's like, who would not be like wanting to get tested after getting a letter like that? And they have a very narrow window of February 9th to 25th, and I don't understand like why it's such a narrow window of time. What if you have someone who's out of town during this time or sick and recovering and can't be seen during this time? I don't know. It just seems very odd to me, that kind of narrow window of time. It says a team from the Augusta VA was sent to Dublin to reprocess all equipment after the internal review in mid-January. Veterans affected by that three-day halt for cleaning have been rescheduled. If you have any questions, you're asked to call the communication center. And then it has the phone number here, the hours, dates, all that good stuff. And this was reported originally, the news article I'm sourcing this from is 13WMAZ News. And there's a video that they have that's posted on YouTube that goes along with it. You can find the direct link to this as well as a frequently asked questions document PDF that appears they posted on their website. And it seems to me that this is a document that came directly from the VA, the Carl Vinson VA Medical Center. That's what it looks like to me, essentially. The two-page, approximately, document. Really a page and a half, almost 2 pages. Anyway, so the link to that is below this if you want to check that out. I also included another link to information about that topic. And it was actually... yeah, it's actually the YouTube video that I found. It's actually from the same news outlet. So it must be the local news. So far, it appears to me that only the local news has picked this up. Last I checked, it may be national now. I don't know. But at the time, it just looks like a local news story. I also linked to the related facility websites. Okay, so on to other topics I want to cover. And originally, like I was saying, I'm doing this new format because I'm very ambitious and really want to cover all this in like long format and deep dives. But I just don't have the ability to do that at this point in time. So I'm going to do it more in a kind of a quick hitter roundup. All right. So 3M military earplug lawsuits. So basically, there's a ton of lawsuits about earplugs and allegations that they basically were not working, that they were sold to the federal government, to the military for use with the service members to be placed in their ears, obviously, to protect them from hearing loss. And that basically it's alleged that, you know, they were defective, they didn't do their job. I've read quite a lot about this. You can literally type in an internet search and there will be more articles and stuff that you could possibly read. Now, the videos on it are pretty sparse because I actually looked into that as well. Most of the videos, and there aren't that many that are being done by personal injury lawyers right now that are talking about basically how to file like a complaint slash lawsuit with regards to these earplugs. And there's like, evidently, based upon the videos I've been listening to from lawyers and the articles I've been reading that are being published by all kinds of news outlets, there are just so many lawsuits right now coming forth about that. Now, there was one that was extremely successful that garnered a high amount of money. Of course, you have to keep in mind, and most people don't seem to know this, that when someone wins, like say before a trial or even settles a lawsuit for a large amount of money, whatever the money is, they literally have to split a substantial amount of that money with the lawyers that represent them, because more likely than not, it's going to be some kind of contingency arrangement where, you know, the lawyer gets like 33 1/3%, just as an example. Okay, I'm not saying that's the contract, but just as an example, that could be the case potentially. That may be. Or it could be they had to pay them hourly, which would be also super expensive. And then there's also other fees that the client could be basically held responsible for, you know, with expert witnesses and you name it, fees like copying paper, printing paper, office supplies, like whatever. You know, it's very expensive. So they have to pay out of that, out of the money that's won, right? Or agreed upon. In this case, it was like before trial, so one. And then they also have to pay taxes on that. So it's not like they just walk away with like all of this money. Now, it is a good amount of money, some of these bigger lawsuits that have been won before trial or jury, whatever you want to call it. I'm not a lawyer, I'm at law school. But, you know, I just like, these people have really serious injuries is what they're communicating, where they have ringing in the ears or complete loss of hearing or a combination of both or some other kind of ear injury. And there's tons of people that were, you know, service members basically utilizing these earplugs allegedly and alleging that they have various injuries because of it, and are bringing forth various complaints slash lawsuits as a result. So it is a very hot topic right now. There's definitely going to be more to come about this. I'm definitely going to be keeping my eyes peeled. This is kind of stuff I read in my spare time. So very interesting. Okay, so in other news, there's an ongoing GI Bill. Oh, and I also want to mention before I move on. So this actually brings me to federal government contracts. So the contracting with the government, I've just noticed a lot of issues with it. Specifically, I'm talking about federal level. I'm not going to get too deep into that, but what I will say is there's been a lot of issues, and this is well reported nationally through multiple major news outlets, with like the federal housing contracts for service members housing on bases. There's been a lot of issues. There have been officials within the Department of Defense that have, you know, to their credit, acknowledged those issues. Those issues are still being attempted to be addressed ongoing. I'm not exactly sure what the exact status of that is. I am not trying to keep that close to tabs on it. But, you know, there was also issues regarding contracts with the federal government pertaining to the burn pits that were overseas in the Middle East and on those military bases, forward operating bases that were being set up at the time and how the trash was being handled and how it was being disposed of and incinerators that were there that were not being utilized for whatever the reason and who was making what choices and who said and did what. And then basically countless allegations of service members communicating that they're having health issues because of the fumes of what was in those burn pits and what was being, burned in the burn pits, basically. You know, there's so much information about that. I've read a ton about it. It's overwhelming, the volume of information about it. And it has gone through the American legal system. And, there have been issues with basically, I'm not going to really get into it, but there's been issues essentially with all of this. You can do your own research and look into it. It might be something I get into later, but not now. Okay, so it just makes me think a lot about those federal government contracts. So ongoing GI Bill court case and opportunity for public commentary. So this is something I mentioned many, many months ago, I think, in one of my videos/podcasts. So basically, there is a court case with a military veteran who has, and I'll actually probably pull it up right now. I can share my screen on that. The person's a male. He has been for over 6 years, is what the news article said, fighting the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, Office of General Counsel, their lawyers specifically, with regard to his GI Bill benefits. And my understanding is this is about the Montgomery GI Bill and about the money. I think it's, I want to say $1,200. I might be off on that. That was paid into this and not paid out, because basically you were able to get one or the other, like the post 9/11 GI Bill or the Montgomery GI Bill for a certain set of military veterans. Okay. Service members, veterans. And you weren't allowed to get both. It was like you got one or the other, the system. So I have it pulled up. The title of it, it's published by the Military Times. It's linked in the description of this video or podcast. Now, if you're on Twitter, I'm unable to post anything in the description, only a title, so you won't see this. So if you're on Twitter, I encourage you to go ahead and hop on to LinkedIn or hop on to YouTube or hop on to the podcast so you can kind of see the notes that I put into the, onto the description for more information. So it's published by Military Times. It's their news article. It says, want to use both post 9/11 and Montgomery GI Bill benefits? Hurry up and wait, which is a play on the phrase that's frequently said inside the military, about the military, hurry up and wait. And I have a lot of thoughts about that phrase, but I won't be getting into them today. And it has a picture for those of you listening that can't see the video of a service member sitting at, it looks like a desk in front of a laptop with a stack of academic kind of books. So it goes into great detail about this. And so one of the issues I have about this is they're saying that basically the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit are requesting public commentary and asking for basically commentary. Right? Thoughts and opinions from the public on this issue. And I would be happy to give a comment of some kind. However, I don't know where to send the comment to. I don't recall anywhere in the news article stating, hey, submit a comment here. I literally don't see anywhere where it says that. But basically, these going up against any sizable organization, whether it be the federal government or a massive, corporation potentially, it can take and does take in many cases years and years and years of people's lives. And, I have nothing but empathy for the person, the veteran who's going through this, and even their legal team who seems to be really invested in this, because it's not easy. If you followed me for any length of time, you'll know, you watch my videos, listen to my podcast, that for over 5 years, I went through fighting for my civil rights against the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, specifically Veterans Health Administration, their Office of General Counsel, lawyers representing them. And after that, I just really couldn't keep going. It's like, it wasn't worth it. You know, as a pro se litigant, I wasn't going to be reimbursed for my hours spent, which were in excess of 100 hours easy. It may have been more than way more than that for my time spent. And it was just really a system that was very not for the person bringing the complaint is what I discovered. And so it really felt like a waste of time. So this person, you know, I saw, I'm trying to find where it said in here how long they've been going at it. Let's see. So I'm not seeing it in here exactly where it said how long they're going at it, but let's see. It just says in a years-long fight over the education benefits. There's various veteran groups that, of course, have weighed in on this. They typically do on these big issues. You know, there's more paperwork involved with, it says that the last week, members of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the federal court ordered attorneys to provide new briefs for a full panel hearing on the issue following an appeal request from the Department of Veterans Affairs, because basically they lost. The U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs Office of General Counsel, the lawyers lost the last like legal, whatever you want to call it, hearing. I don't even know, court hearing. I don't know. And so they filed an appeal. Okay. And so it says the move comes roughly 6 months after a three-judge panel of the court ruled against VA lawyers' assertion that veterans can use either one of the two GI Bill programs, but not both. And this, oh, there it is. It says the case Rudsill, R-U-D-S-I-L-L, sorry if I mispronounced that, versus McDonough, oh my God, I just cannot pronounce these names, has been pending in federal courts for more than 6 years. That's what I was talking about here, for more than 6 years. So I did read that in the article. Okay. Anyways, it says that the attorneys for this veteran, Army veteran, Jim Rudisell, I may be butchering that, an Army veteran wounded in a roadside bomb attack in Iraq in 2005, have argued that department officials, I think it's misread. But saying it MIRED, M-I-R-E-A-D, but I think it means misread the law when they put in place a policy forcing veterans to choose between the programs rather than allowing them to collect money from both. So I'm actually one of the veterans actually affected by this, ironically. I'm actually affected by a lot of these news articles that I read about or have some kind of direct connection to it in some way, shape, or form, to include the earplugs. And so, basically, I paid into the Montgomery GI Bill when I was in the military, okay, when I was in the Army. I paid into it. And one of the issues I had with it, and I think this is kind of one of the issues that comes up a lot with this stuff with the government, is they don't really think things through. The politicians and the policymakers and stuff like that when they're implementing these policies. And basically, you know, you paid in a certain amount of money. I want to say I recall I paid in $1,200. I may be wrong about that. Maybe it was a little more. Maybe it was a little less. I'm not quite sure. But I recall it being like $1,200. It was automatically deducted out of my paycheck. I've heard the same from other veterans that have communicated this to me. And essentially, you know, that's supposed to make it to where you have to get the Montgomery GI Bill. This was before the post 9/11 GI Bill existed or was created. Okay. That was my experience. And then moving forward, there was just tons of legislative changes in many areas to include the GI Bill. And then things changed and it became you basically opt in for one or the other. And that money that was paid in, it was never addressed ever, like never, ever, ever addressed. And so it's just so weird to me because you didn't get your money back. And no one from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs has ever communicated to me or any other representative from the government communicated to me, oh, well, this is how you can get that money back that you paid in. Because what's weird about it is that, like, if you did not pay that money in, if you opted not to, let's say I was like, okay, I'm not going to pay into it, I literally would still be getting, I could still be eligible for the post 9/11 GI Bill. It's so weird. You know what I mean? I mean, there's just so many weird rules. Like, for example, if I would have stayed in maybe like a year or less longer into the military and the Army, I would be in underneath the group of veterans where it's like they're eligible for the forever GI Bill instead of the time limited GI Bill, you know, I don't really want to say the number of years because it keeps changing, I feel like, but I think I know the number of years. Anyway, so there's just like a lot of changes that are very confusing and really weird, and I don't feel like they were ever really thought out. And this is something I see constantly in legislative changes with so many things, to include the Veterans Health Administration specifically. There's new changes with that as well. Okay. So, several lower courts have agreed with that position, instructing VA officials to give Reticel, sorry for butchering the name, another year of GI Bill benefits. Okay. Outside advocates have speculated that the ruling could apply to as many as 2 million veterans who have used up their post 9/11 GI Bill benefits, but also paid into the Montgomery GI Bill program while they were in the ranks. That would be yours truly right here. I'm one of the 2 million people. The new court hearing will focus not just on Reticel's case, but a broader question posed by the court. Quote, for a veteran who qualifies for the Montgomery GI Bill and the post 9/11 GI Bill under a separate period of qualifying service, what is the veteran's statutory entitlement to education benefits? Question mark, end quote. So that's like a lot of legalese, in my opinion. That's like an overly complicated way of, you know, basically talking about these two post 9/11 GI Bill and Montgomery GI Bill, like educational programs and who gets what, basically divvying this up. So under the post 9/11 GI Bill education benefits program, eligible veterans receive 36 months of tuition payouts, housing stipends, and other financial assistance. And that just really is so vague in that description, because there were so many limitations of the post 9/11 GI Bill, and they've changed it and changed it, and they just keep changing it. The legislators do. It's so much so that I have a lot of difficulty in keeping up with it, and I don't feel that the changes are very fair either in many cases. I've covered this in other videos. I'm going to spare you here though. So anyways, I'm going to go ahead and kind of skip ahead here, but basically it says that you can submit a comment. The public can submit a comment. And if you know how to submit a comment about this GI Bill case, please let me know in the comments of this video, if you're able to comment on it, or leave a message for the podcast, because I really don't know how to leave a comment about it, and I would like to know how to. Short of reaching out to the court, I'm really quite confused about, you know, how I'd even go about that. All right, so there is new legislation called H.R. 3967, the Honoring Our Pact Act. So I'm going to jump right into that. Yes, I've moved on to the next topic. If you're confused, I'm pulling up the PDF of this congressional legislation. I think it's been passed, but I'm not sure. I'm actually going to go ahead and just share my screen, share what I got going on here, and see if I can pull this up. All right. It has been pulled up successfully. All right. Let's see. It's 73 pages. Okay, so I'm not going to be covering all of that here today. That's for sure. Because quite frankly, I don't have that much time tonight to do that. That is just a massive amount of information. All right, so I'm just cleaning this up a little bit, my screen, so you can see it better. All right, there it is. So H.R. 3967, to improve healthcare and benefits for veterans exposed to toxic substances and for other purposes. It says it looks like it was introduced June 17th, 2021. Oh, wow. This is just so much. So this isn't the short one that I was thinking about. It seems to be covering research matters, improvement of resources and training regarding toxic exposed veterans, registries, records, and other matters, expansion of healthcare eligibility for toxic exposed veterans. Okay, so this may or may not be an effort to basically expand healthcare for, and I think it is, expansion, section 103, expansion of healthcare for specific categories of toxic exposed veterans. So this is another hot topic that's been coming up for months and months and months and months and months in the media. A lot of news outlets are reporting upon that. And it is a topic of hotly debated, hotly contested between politicians. And the reason is it has to do with money. It has to do with money. Lots and lots of cash is what this has to do with. So I'm going to go ahead and just look up the actual title and try to see if this has been passed yet. I don't know if it has been. But basically, you know, I'm not going to get into the politics of war. I thought a lot about how to talk about this on this broadcast tonight. So much so that I actually decided not to even go into it. Go into it last night, which I was thinking about doing. All right. And so here's my screen here. So this says who sponsored it, which politician. I'm not even going to try to say the name. The first name is, his first name is Mark. I'm not going to try to say his last name because I don't want to mess it up. It looks like he sits on the House Veterans Affairs Armed Services Committee. And let's see. What are the actions on it? Latest actions. Okay. Okay. It looks like it's been introduced in the House in June of 2021. That's the action overview. So it doesn't say anything about it having passed. Now, let me look at all actions. Okay, wait a minute. Let's see. Okay, so June 17th, 2021, introduced in the House, action by House of Representatives. And then the last action, the most recent one, is June 24th, 2021, ordered to be reported by the yeas and nays 14 to 11, action by Committee on Veterans Affairs. So I don't know if this has become law or not. I don't know. I really don't know if it has. But I'm going to do another quick search to see what I can find. But anyways, back to what I was trying to say, and that is politics of war. I'm not going to get into it too much, but it does make me nauseous and upset me, and I find it very alarming about how quick decisions were made to engage in global conflicts that would lead to deaths of people, and injuries of service members and whatnot, and long-term consequences and side effects, to include but not limited to, you know, the cost of healthcare and the issues with management at Veterans Health Administration long-term. Veterans Health Administration has a super, oh gosh, I kept up the VHA banner the whole time, even when I wasn't talking about the VHA. Disregard with the GI Bill, because that's the Veterans Benefits Administration, not the VHA, but I'll keep up the VHA banner for right now. But basically, Veterans Health Administration has a storied history of being dysfunctional and mismanaged. Have you ever heard of the movie called Born on the 4th of July? I'm pretty sure that was the name of it. It was all about, you know, Veterans Health Administration and about the foul treatment that this veteran received, played by Tom Cruise. This movie is super famous. And I hate to say it, but like my personal and like my experiences with the Veterans Affairs Organization, this movie, parts of it, there's a specific part of it that really rings true to me. And the foul treatment that I've gotten, even as recently as today, it still rings true to me. So this is the banner right here, the movie poster, Born on the 4th of July. That was the name of it, okay? So I just want to show that to you to kind of trigger your memory, or so you can look it up. Depending on what generation you're in, you may not even know about this movie. I encourage everyone to watch this movie. If you have not watched this movie, there are a lot of themes and a lot of parallels, even though that this content of this movie took place before I was even born on this earth in my physical form, you know, it still rings true. So much of this movie does, the topics of it, and specifically the behavior of certain people at Veterans Health Administration. I'm not saying that all the people behave that way at all. That's not what I'm trying to say. I used to work at Veterans Health Administration. I certainly did not behave that way, you know, all those years ago. but like some people really do, and it's toxic enough that it is very much affecting the healthcare and the ability to obtain healthcare of military veterans nationwide. There is no doubt in my mind where I make that statement. I've worked at multiple facilities previously in years past. I've been a patient at multiple facilities in years past, or tried to be. And I've literally been in multiple regions, multiple states, and multiple VHA facilities, Veterans Health Administration facilities, and I've seen these problems. They're systemic. So my point with all of that, that what I just said, is that I am just very alarmed by, in my lifetime alone, the decisions to enter into global conflicts without full consideration of the aftermath, or even caring potentially about the aftermath of those decisions. And now we have the consequences that people are living and dying through. You know, okay, moving on. So let's see. Department of Defense, burn pits, healthcare provider training act. So I remember that one. And I'm trying to see. Okay. Let's see. Hold on. I'm actually going back to the other piece of legislation before I move on to the next one. Okay. All right. I'm going to go ahead and share my screen again to kind of share what I'm talking about. So this is a website that I've shared before. It's a governmental website. It's the House Committee on Veterans Affairs. And this was published June 24th, 2021. It says, titled, Chairman Takano's Bipartisan Honoring Our Pact Act Passes Through Committee. Comprehensive legislation will address military toxic exposure. So it says it passed in the full committee markup. I don't really know what that means. It says that we had 25 original co-sponsors and the support of 9 veteran service organizations. And then it says it was bipartisan legislation, will comprehensively address toxic exposure. And there is a video you can watch related to this if you would like to. I do not have this link, just to be clear, but it is on the House Committee on Veterans Affairs if you would like to look it up. All right. I'm just not sure if it's been enacted into law. So now, because you can pass it through certain areas, like it's saying it passed through in the full committee markup, but it's not saying it passed anywhere else. So you can like have some people vote for it and other people vote against it, and then it's just dead in the water essentially. So I'm not quite sure. All right, so moving on. H.R. 4397, the Department of Defense Burn Pits Healthcare Provider Training Act. So that was very brief, if I remember correctly. And it was basically saying that healthcare providers were going to be required to be trained on this. And I think it was the VA and Department of Defense. I went ahead and linked directly to this in my description so you could see it if you'd like to reference that. I'm just going to briefly look it up. I'm not going to try to cover it. These things are way too long, even the short form of them. My God, they are. And I think it passed because I don't think it cost like a ton of money basically to pass. I think it was like, oh, you know, this is something that they can be trained on. And there's so much training in the government you wouldn't even believe if you haven't worked in the federal government. It says on July 9th, 2021, it was referred to the House Committee on Armed Services, introduced in the House. So I'm not sure if this one passed either. I'm not sure. I really don't know. But what I do know is just basically training about burn pits, healthcare, and potentially health consequences for healthcare providers. All right. So Burn Pit Registry Expansion Act, H.R. 4400. So you can look at the PDF I linked directly in the description of this video if you're watching where there's a description, or the podcast. And basically, it's supposed to expand people, I think, that are eligible to register. It's a ton of data collection. Not really sure what that's going to lead to. And when it comes to a lot of this legislation, it just feels like pieces of the puzzle are being put in it feels like kind of like a quilt that's being put together that doesn't really kind of all make sense when you look at it. I don't know what the end result is going to be of all of this legislation that's being introduced or all the policy changes that are happening. And I know right now that at the Veterans Health Administration, it's a supersized hot mess. And I don't know. Like, I don't really know what's going to happen. I saw in news, which I didn't include in the information description here, but I saw news recently that there were, I think it passed into legislation, if I'm not mistaken, if I remember correctly, that service members that were eligible are going to be, once they enter into becoming a veteran and exit active duty military service, are going to be automatically enrolled, required to be automatically enrolled by Veterans Health Administration into Veterans Health Care at Veterans Health Administration, basically. But they will have an ability to opt out if they choose to. And that this was supposed to be retroactive 90 days from the time the legislation was enacted, if I remember correctly. So I saw that it's a controversial piece of legislation, like so many things. The people that are for it are basically saying, oh, this is gonna be so great. It's gonna get so many more people that need healthcare. It's gonna, you know, save lives, yada yada. And then you have the opposing side that are like, you know, Veterans Health Administration is dysfunctional. Yes, that's true, by the way. And this is just going to make it worse and not solve existing problems. And I definitely see that perspective. I really do. Because right now, the biggest issue I see, I'm about to enter into the day in the life topics right now, is a clear lack of oversight inside of Veterans Health Administration. The last I checked, the public numbers on Veterans Affairs' own reporting is that they have over 300,000 employees nationwide in these Veterans Health Administration facilities alone. Okay, that's a lot of people. That's a lot of managers. That's a lot of employees. That's a lot of supervisors. That's a lot of subordinates, all right? That's a lot of executives. That's a lot of things. But, you know, despite all these new laws, despite the White House hotline, which is Veterans Experience Office, VEO, despite, congressional people, reps, complaints you can file, you know, patient advocates being stationed inside of all the veteran health facilities, despite all the supervisors, there is a complete lack of oversight in these Veterans Health Administration facilities nationwide. There is no doubt in my mind at this point. I've seen enough to know that's true. And it's pretty systemic. And that's why you have all of these issues popping up in the news and beyond in people's personal lives, even in issues I'm experiencing in my daily life. So day in the life topics right now that I'm going to cover, so Fayetteville, North Carolina Veterans Health Administration, if you've watched my other videos, listened to my other podcasts, you will know I've been having a heck of a time trying to get basic health care lined up there. I'm actively being ignored right now by a specific department that's supposed to be assisting me with coordinating my health care. These are real basic things, real basic appointments, and it's just a real trial and tribulation. And so, you know, they sent a letter that said you had 14 days to contact them to get health care. And they shouldn't have sent the letter because I'd already contacted them the exact same day they reached out to me. This was a while ago, like over, I don't know, a week, 2 weeks. I can't remember. It's been a while ago. And since then, you know, I've been actively ignored by certain people that are supposed to be helping me. Fayetteville, North Carolina Veterans Health Administration facility. And, I did speak to one person, reached out. I felt like they were trying to overcompensate for the just choices that other people have made not to do their job there. And I unfortunately still have not been able to move forward with my own basic healthcare needs that were supposed to be covered underneath the Traveling Veterans Program, which I've talked extensively about. And that's just really a hard thing to deal with, you know, because it's like I am unable to move forward without the cooperation of the people that work at the Fayetteville, North Carolina Veterans Health Administration facility. And this is a problem veterans are going to face in every single region across America at Veterans Health Administration facilities. If the employees choose not to help them, they will not be able to get the health care that they need. Okay. And want. All right. So that's the issue. So one of the things I want to mention is that some of the politicians have even gone so far as to introduce legislation, which I've actually covered. It has not been passed, though, last I checked, about basically replacing Veterans Health Administration with a TRICARE option. I've come to the conclusion that for me personally, and this is me speaking for me, I'm not in favor of that. All I'm going to tell you about TRICARE after really thinking about it is that I do not have a very high opinion of TRICARE. And that's all I'm going to say about that. I'm going to move right on. Okay, so one of the things in the day in the life topics I want to cover is that, and I was going to do a real in-depth thing. I even had taken screenshots of my medical record I was going to show you guys. I decided not to, not because I care not to, but because it's just time consuming. So the Louisiana Veterans Health Administration, I found out many months later, tested me for pregnancy and illicit substances, basically illegal drugs, without my knowledge or consent. So this violates, and I'm not a lawyer, I haven't been to law school, and just putting that out there, nothing I say is legal advice at all. But with that said, this violated my civil healthcare rights, specifically the American Informed Consent legal doctrine. All right. Which basically means that patients in America have a right to be informed of the test or procedures or whatever medical interventions are being conducted on them. And they have a right to agree or to disagree with that and to move forward or not move forward, okay? Civilian patients have that right in America. It's a basic concept of informed consent. Anyone working in the medical community should know that. I've worked in healthcare most of my adult life in some way, shape, or form. I know that. So, you know, informed consent seems to be really something that's overlooked in Veterans Health Administration. It certainly was in the Louisiana region where I was at. And it bothered me quite a lot that I wasn't informed of this. Now, I obviously wasn't pregnant and I also did not test positive for any illicit substances, but that's not the point. The point is I had a legal right to be informed of that and I was not informed of that. And this just shows this chronic disregard by Veterans Health Administration for the rights of veterans, in my opinion and direct experience. So in the description, if you're watching this on basically YouTube, LinkedIn, or if you're listening to the podcast, you should be able to see the description and it. I reference the Code of Medical Ethics Opinion 2.1.1. I reference informed consent from a governmental website, also the informed consent doctrine from a university, a legal website, and on and on. Okay, moving on. So I wanted to bring up something else I experienced at Veterans Health Administration, which I first encountered in the Louisiana region when I attempted to receive healthcare there. And that's sexism at Veterans Health Administration and their pharmacy. What do I mean by that? What I mean by that is that I realized after months and months and months and months and months of trying to get medical appointments that were female specific and not being able to obtain them, that if I were a man that needed male specific drugs like erectile dysfunction drugs at Veterans Health Administration, that I would have been able to receive it no problems, no question asked. But when I tried to receive female specific drugs at Veterans Health Administration pharmacy in the Louisiana region, I was told, and I was told it was a national policy, that that wasn't going to happen. And I was told that they'd never received a request like that because they work mostly with men, not women, at Veterans Health Administration. I'm not stupid. I am aware that most people in the military are men. I'm aware of this, specifically in certain branches like the Army, which I was in, or the Marine Corps, which I was not in. Okay? I get it. However, I am supposed to have a legal right to receive full health care at Veterans Health Administration, regardless of my gender as a woman. Yet I have been unable to receive that health care for well over a year now, and it is because of my gender, repeatedly, both at the pharmacy and in the medical venue. Okay? And there's been a lot of issues with just one stumbling block after another. For example, my amazing female healthcare provider that I had a high opinion of, who I felt was very competent, quit working at Veterans Health Administration, not once, but twice. Okay? Quit twice. So I wasn't able to see that person ever again after my initial visit, which was a year prior. Also, you know, they didn't have a replacement, which is chronic. This is a chronic part of the oversight issues inside of Veterans Health Administration why this organization has been failing so severely for so many years. They cannot terminate the people who need to be terminated for one reason or another. They don't want to, they don't care to, or they can't figure it out because the civil service system is so complicated. Or they can't retain the people that are doing great work there that desperately need to be retained at Veterans Health Administration. Or/and they cannot recruit the people that desperately need to be recruited. And I got a lot of thoughts about that that I'm not going to get into, but the system for hiring that I have seen is a super-sized hot mess. And anyone who is being honest with you that works there that knows anything about hiring will say the same thing. Most of them will never do it publicly because obviously they still work for the organization. All right. So that's what I wanted to say about that. You know, that if I had a prostate issue when I was a man, I would have been able to get that taken care of pretty quickly. You know, if I need some kind of exam. But if you need a pap smear as a woman, which is a routine part of medical care for women and checkups, also known as a well woman exam, they've really politically corrected that, I guess, through the years. I was unable to obtain that, basically. You know, it was just nothing but a problem. And the quality of care through the Veterans Health Administration is something that I have taken issue with again and again and again, and pointed out. Because not only do I expect health care through the Veterans Health Administration, I expect quality health care through the Veterans Health Administration, okay? Okay, this also goes for mammograms, breast ultrasounds at Veterans Health Administration. So this may be too much information, but you know what? I'm just going to put it all out there. So it has been nationally stated by the former secretary of the VA, to their credit, that there were issues with the equipment that they did not have to provide mammograms, breast ultrasounds. And why this is important is because this screens women for cancer, okay? Now, inside of the There's a piece of legislation. I'm forgetting right now the name of it. But basically, there's a piece of legislation out there, women specific. And it's supposed to cover healthcare for women and making sure they can get a Veterans Health Administration. Oh, Deborah Sampson Act. Thank God I made a note. This is why I make notes. The Deborah Sampson Act is supposed to make sure that women are able to get mammograms and breast ultrasounds and pap smears and well women exams at the Veterans Health Administration. And that is not happening in Louisiana in my direct experience. I remember that I went there and I agreed to have a breast ultrasound screening done at Veterans Health Administration in Alexandria, Louisiana Medical Center. And it was canceled on me on the last minute. Just day or days before actually me showing up there. I mean, it might have been the day before. I can't quite remember. It was a long time ago. And because they told me that they did not have the people, training, or equipment to provide that service. So it was outsourced to a local hospital where they had basically, I'm assuming, roughly an equal number of male and female patients to see people. And they were used to seeing women. They had the equipment. They're all set up. There was no issue. So they, you know, took care of that through the Veterans Health Administration Community Care Network. But it's just an example. If you're a veteran, you know, there are likely going to be challenges to obtaining the health care you need at Veterans Health Administration. I'm not saying there will be for sure. You may get lucky. But based upon what politicians are saying nationally, you know, whether they're a Democrat or Republican, there seems to be agreement that, hey, we see issues here in Veterans Health Administration. Our constituents are telling us, the veterans, that we got issues here at these facilities nationwide. This is systemic, okay? That's what they're saying. If you read the news articles, it's out there. So if you're a veteran seeking healthcare, Veterans Health Administration, based upon the information out there and my own experiences, it seems likely that a veteran may have issues trying to obtain quality healthcare at Veterans Health Administration through them in one way or another, okay? Whether it be their community care network or something else. But if you're a woman like myself, you know, I feel that it is much harder to get healthcare through Veterans Health Administration than if I were a man. And there is clear sexism coming through the healthcare system that I experienced directly. And so I have to wonder how many other people may be having that experience. Clearly, there is a reason why the act, the Deborah Sampson Act, was implemented and passed, okay? I don't think it was written for fun because it's lengthy and boring. All right, moving on. Podiatry Department at Alexandria Pineville, that's the address, Louisiana. Veterans Health Administration podiatrist. So I want to cover that. I've been meaning to cover this for months. Haven't gotten around to it, but I'm going to cover it now. So basically, they had one podiatrist in the entire Alexandria, Louisiana Veterans Affairs Facility healthcare system, okay, in their facility. One. They had one. That person evidently was a man. He quit. I don't know why. Basically, I found out that that person went on leave, never to return, is what I was told by staff at that facility. And it was kind of comical because there was a person working as assistant in that department. And this person told me, basically, she was an assistant to no one. She literally was working in a vacant department, a podiatry department with no podiatrist. So they didn't have any staff to staff the podiatry department. And then the community care network had no podiatrist in the network for 75-mile radius. There was no podiatrist in their basically insurance network for 75 miles. Okay, mind-blowing to me. So I bring that up to kind of highlight these red flag issues that I am seeing in different regions of the Veterans Health Administration that are not being addressed, whether they're not able to be addressed or they're not willing to address them. I don't know. It's a really problematic healthcare system. And I've read repeatedly now a couple of different places, which I don't have cited, that it's the largest healthcare system in America. And maybe they mean because it's just like the organization itself is so big. That's what I'm thinking they mean when they kind of say that, make those comments. And then also something else I read about, which I don't think I have included in the weekly roundup, but I wanted to bring up, kind of hit my radar, is that a audit was done from a governmental like accountability office. It was a random audit, it looked like. And basically it was of the Community Care Network for the Veterans Health Administration. And I don't know if it was a specific region or if it was all across. I can't quite remember. Like I said, I didn't save that article. If I come back across it, I'll probably mention it again in the future. And basically, it was saying that a small percentage, it was a very small percentage, I think it was 0.2%, if I'm not mistaken, don't quote me here, but it was a very small percentage of the entire network had people in it, healthcare providers in it, in their insurance network, that were not supposed to be there due to licensing issues of one kind of another. And some of them were quite severe issues, okay? Some of it had to do with, like, insurance fraud. Is what was being alleged. And so evidently they're supposed to do regular checks. If I'm not mistaken, I think the article said monthly checks on the licensing status and the basically status of these healthcare providers, allegedly based upon the article, what I recall I read, that was not being done. And now it's like this big to-do. There were multiple politicians that signed this letter demanding that the Veterans Health Administration take action and remove these providers from the network. And Veterans Health Administration, they were saying they're eager to do so and that they're going to get right on it. And it's a lot of political to do, you know what I mean? A lot of politics here with the politicians trying to, you know, showboat and look good and look like they're doing something important so they can get reelected and keep their important positions that they want to keep. And the same goes for the Veterans Health Administration. You know, they're not elected, they're appointed a number of these super higher up execs, or they've been promoted into like a senior executive service, SES, if I'm not mistaken. Don't quote me on that. But the point is that it's just highlights ongoing severe issues within the Veterans Health Administration that cannot be ignored if you're a veteran that needs healthcare there, like I do, okay? And I got this email that was so disrespectful today from a person, a staff member at the Fayetteville Veterans Health Administration. And they basically were ignoring my request for assistance that they're required to respond to. and just completely blowing me off. So again, I called today, which is becoming a daily thing again, the White House hotline, VEO, which I actually can put that up here, Veterans Experience Office. As always, they're so nice. They're so wonderful. And, you know, they made note of my reason for my call and updated my case about the situation. And I hope to have it resolved soon. But all of these issues, these are kind of the things, the weekly roundup and the day in the life that kind of circulate in my head ongoing, like every hour of my life, you know what I mean? Every day of my life. And, you know, it's alarming to me. It's concerning to me. And I know that these issues are growing, and I see it as basically something where it's going to hit critical mass once again. And it's going to be all over the news because something, you know, more explosive happens. So anyways, that is it for today. I think that's quite enough. I've been on here for an hour now. So that was pretty organized though. I was pretty organized about, pretty happy about that. So I wish you all the best, and I hope you have a great day. Bye. Check out HelloVanessaMedia.com. Check out store.HelloVanessaMedia.com. Subscribe on Rumble, YouTube, follow on podcasting platforms, and LinkedIn.